Hi, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Dakota Digest, brought to you by South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Nate Weck, and thanks for joining me. Here's the top SDPB programming for the week ending January 22nd. Public school administrators are telling teachers a plan to increase the average teacher's salary to more than $48,500. However, that doesn't mean pay raises across the board. As SDPB's Keely Boltina reports, Governor Dennis Dugard wants to boost education funding by raising the sales tax by half a cent.
South Dakota's Blue Ribbon Task Force determined that teacher pay in South Dakota is behind surrounding states by thousands of dollars. Now lawmakers must decide on the right mechanism for funding K-12 education and how much money school districts should receive. Governor Dennis Dugard's plan raises enough money to push the average teacher salary to $48,500. Harrisburg Superintendent Jim Holbeck says he's careful to clarify that the numbers state leaders use to discuss raises for teachers are averages for all of South Dakota.
Last year, if we would have told our teachers we could give, let's say, a $4,000 raise, our teachers would have been ecstatic. If they hear that everyone's getting an $8,500 raise, we have to explain that to them, that that's not true. We're hoping that they're not upset with that.
Holbeck says teachers understand that the discussion focuses on increasing the average salary, not ensuring a specific raise to every teacher. State leaders emphasize the proposal keeps salary decisions under local control. Holbeck says the governor's plan infuses $1.7 million in new money into his district.
Now, if I divide all my teachers into that and not give anybody else any other raise, it works out to about a $5,300, $5,400 raise. Well, we have to take care of all the other employees and give them raises. So the only thing we are telling our teachers is this. It's not going to be an $8,500 raise in Harrisburg. There's no way possibly we can get to that. The question is, are you happy with getting maybe somewhere close to half of that amount?
Holbeck says the funding plan gives some districts enough money to increase teacher salaries significantly more than works in Harrisburg. He says other districts are faced with providing smaller raises to classroom teachers. Holbeck says the effort to boost teacher salaries is the biggest he's seen in nearly 30 years in administration. He says superintendents welcome the funding for teacher pay.
In spite of losing their lands to settlers and the federal government, being displaced to reservations, having their ceremonies banned for nearly half a century, and enduring the frequent persecutions of life in Christian and government boarding schools, the Lakota people have managed to retain much of their culture. SDPB's Jim Kent recently visited the Pine Ridge Reservation to observe an eagle feather ceremony, and he also spoke with two Lakota men about the tradition's significance and its importance in today's world.
I'm at Billy Mills Hall on the Pine Ridge Reservation, where two dozen members of the Goings family have gathered for a Lakota tradition that dates back to the origins of their culture. The eagle feather ceremony is held to recognize an individual within the tribe who has achieved a goal or demonstrated a particular ability that sets him apart from the rest. Although historically the awarding of an eagle feather frequently occurred as a result of showing great bravery in battle, times have changed, and so has the criteria for earning this symbol of accomplishment. Charlie Newholy explains.
Our eagle feathers were very special. You know, when you were given an eagle feather, it was because people believe in you and your achievements. Nowadays, people give eagle feathers for graduation. These are showing that young person that they achieve something. They can achieve anything in life.
As part of the Goings extended family, Charlie Newholy attends such ceremonies because he knows the traditional songs. He also knows the traditional prayers. Newholy says today, Laurel Goings is being given an eagle feather for participating in the recent Future Generations ride from Bridger, South Dakota, to the site of the Wounded Knee Massacre on Pine Ridge.
We gave him a feather because he became a staff carrier. It's just like transitioning into manhood. The non-native people would see it as transition into manhood.
Being in the position of staff carrier is an important role for anyone on a horseback trail ride. Bearing the eagle feathers of other members of the family, the staff is carried for the duration of the long trek. For the Future Generations ride, that's more than 160 miles. The staff carrier decides when to start, when to stop, and what the pace is. Because the ride is focused on the future generations of the Lakota people, it's a spiritual journey. Carrying a staff adorned with eagle feathers, says New Holy, reinforces that message.
The eagle feather has a spirit. It's a spirit that's in that, lives within that. We try to stay in that tradition even today, but...
But people are only human. So over the course of a two-week journey, like the Future Generations ride, as the days grow long, nights and rest stops seem too short, and the winter weather begins to take its toll, problems can erupt. It was at a time like this that 20-year-old Laurel Goings was tested, and when he almost gave up, says Charlie Newholy.
Being a staff carrier is hard, because you're going to have people saying stuff to you. You're going to put up with people that are jealous. But the reason why you're going is because of a prayer. If you believe in that prayer, you're not going to pay attention to what these people say.
And one of the encouragements I give him, I'm always going to give him that encouragement.
Laurel Goings says a close family friend helped him find the determination and fortitude to finish leading the Future Generations ride.
Jeremiah, he helped me out.
What did he say to get you going?
That there's going to be a lot of doubters, that there's going to be a lot of non-believers that push you to stop what you're doing.
But in the end, says Laurel, he had to follow the advice that he now passes on to others.
Stay strong, stay humble.
As an eagle feather is tied to Laurel Goings' head by his grandfather, New Holy reminds the young man that he showed leadership as the staff carrier. He adds that now Laurel must extend those leadership qualities to his family, his community, and to his tribe. But New Holy notes that this new leader won't be alone.
Like what we did today with Laurel is letting him know that we honor him. We honor him, and we're going to support him. And whatever support that he needs, you know, that we're going to be there. If he needs somebody to talk to, if he's having rough times, there's somebody who's going to be there.
New Holy says this recognition and support should be available for all Lakota youth. But far too often, too many fall through the cracks, leading to drug and alcohol abuse, as well as suicide. One way to avoid that, New Holy believes, is by carrying on traditions, like the Eagle Feather ceremony.
Leaders in Pierre are laying out the governor's new plan for dispensing state tax dollars to schools. This week's discussion includes details about proposed caps to school districts' reserve funds. SDPB's Keely Boltina, who has been examining the education topic throughout the session thus far, has more.
South Dakota school districts are allowed to keep reserve funds. They're basically savings accounts for general fund dollars. Part of Governor Dennis Dugard's plan to alter the funding formula for K-12 schools includes limiting the amount of money schools can squirrel away. Tony Van Huysen with the governor's office says school districts used to have caps on reserve funds. He says it started during Governor Bill Janklow's tenure, and the caps were repealed in 2011.
What we've seen since that time is that general fund reserves in school districts have gone back up quite a bit, and there was a feeling in the task force, and I've heard this from many of you also, that we want to be sure that the dollars that we put into education are going to benefit the students who are here today. And although a reserve is an appropriate and prudent management tool at some level, once it gets too high, we really need to be expecting districts to expend those dollars.
Van Huysen says earlier reserve caps were a flat percentage for all districts. He says the governor's plan includes three separate levels for districts of different sizes.
The rationale for those, for having a tiered system like that, is that a small district with a small budget, 25% of their budget might not really be all that much money, and one significant event could lead them to blow through their reserves. And so as you are a smaller enterprise, you have larger risk and need to put more dollars into insuring yourself against that.
The proposal allows small schools with 200 students or fewer to keep reserves at 40% of the general fund budget. Medium-sized districts with up to 600 students can reserve 30% of their money, and the largest schools can keep 25% of their general fund dollars in reserves.
A bill before state lawmakers changes the way alcohol tax is divided in an attempt to cover costs of local law enforcement. Currently, the revenue generated in the Alcohol Beverage Fund is divided in two ways. Local towns and counties get 25% of the fund, and the state gets 75%. Senate Bill 2 changes that to divide the revenue three ways between the state, county, and town. SDPB's Charles Michael Ray reports.
GOP State Representative Leslie Heineman testified in favor of the legislation. Proponents say local governments are on the hook for prosecuting, defending, housing, and transporting inmates who are convicted of alcohol-related crimes. Heineman says this is a burden on local government budgets that should be more fairly supported by state revenues.
Now you have before you the opportunity to give the counties maybe just a token of their reimbursement of their costs for a lot of the costs that they're incurring.
Heineman was on the summer study committee that recommended the bill.
Many testified that up to 80% of law enforcement and court costs are directly attributable to alcohol. And when we were apprised of the split of the alcohol beverage fund, it just seemed quite inappropriate that the city, or the county, in fact, was left out of that equation.
More than a dozen people spoke in favor of the change. One spoke against. Jim Terwilliger is the state economist. He says the state would take a hit of about $3.8 million under this legislation.
$3.8 million may not seem like a lot, but it is a significant amount. It takes about 7.4% off of our revenue growth from fiscal year 16 to 17, and so that is a big hole to fill.
Terwilliger says there is no statute mandating that alcohol tax revenue needs to fund law enforcement. He says currently the tax supports the general fund, and lawmakers will need to find the missing revenue elsewhere. The committee disagreed and passed Senate Bill 2 unanimously. It's headed for debate on the Senate floor next.
Wind Cave National Park has set a modern-day visitation record. The Southern Black Hills tourist attraction had more visitors in 2015 than they did during the subterranean journey of 1971. SDPB's Jim Kent reports.
Cave tour visitation was up nearly 10% in 2015 when more than 109,000 people toured the world's sixth longest cave. This is the most people through Wind Cave since before tours were limited to 40 people. Park spokesman Tom Farrell explains.
We used to let as many people as possible go on the cave tour. The record is 210 people traveling through the cave, an area that nowadays we limit up to 40. And back in the day, Highway 385 actually used to run right in front of the visitor center. So we got a lot of drive-through traffic coming in that way. And nowadays, it's routed around the visitor center. So those numbers from back in 1968, when they had 138,000 people touring the cave, we just don't think we'll ever eclipse that.
Farrell adds that though some have questioned the number of people who visit the cave as being low compared to visitation numbers for the park itself, he's not surprised by the stats.
We estimate only probably about 1 in 5 visitors actually stop and tour the cave. And you have to realize we have over 30,000 acres of mixed grass prairie and ponderosa pine and a very dynamic wildlife population on the surface. So we know there's a lot of people that don't stop in the cave, but they enjoy some of the other resources in the park.
Farrell notes that a South Dakota Department of Tourism survey indicates that Wind Cave's higher numbers last year may have been due to reduced gas prices combined with increased travel.
President Barack Obama has announced new regulations and a stricter background check for anyone who wants to purchase a firearm. Meanwhile, in South Dakota, 2015 saw a spike in the number of concealed pistol permits. The permits allow a citizen who has completed a background check to legally hide and carry a handgun. While a state-issued concealed carry permit requires a background check, it doesn't necessarily streamline the federal background checks needed to purchase a firearm. Some state lawmakers hope that can change. SDPB's Charles Michael Ray has more.
South Dakota Attorney General Marty Jackley says it's important to understand the difference between a state-issued permit to carry a concealed pistol and the newly expanded federal background checks on firearms.
The federal authorities determine eligibility to purchase firearms, whereas the state authorities determine eligibility to carry a concealed weapon.
And those state authorities have seen a spike in concealed carry applications in recent years. The Secretary of State's office reports there were a record number of new permits issued in 2015. Currently, more than 85,000 state residents have a concealed carry permit. GOP State Representative Tom Bruner is one of them. Bruner is also a sponsor of legislation for an enhanced carry permit that involves a gun safety class. The enhanced permit has reciprocity in more states, and Bruner says he hopes this permit may also expedite the federal background check when purchasing a firearm.
The biggest thing I look at, especially with this enhanced carry or any carry, is and getting people that want to use guns legitimately, education, and getting them familiar with what they're doing is a big thing. So in that regard, I'm certainly for any measure that would require people to be more educated, but it has to be a voluntary thing.
State officials say they're still working with federal authorities to see if a state-issued enhanced permit can smooth the process for purchasing a firearm. Bruner says other than some small changes to current legislation, he is not proposing any major new bills dealing with guns this session.
And that's going to do it for another week of Dakota Digest. If you want additional programming information from South Dakota Public Broadcasting or want to hear more radio news stories, visit us online at sdpb.org. If you want to subscribe to more SDPB podcasts, including our daily radio legislative program, visit the webpage sdpb.org/podcasts. Be sure to stay connected with us on social media as well by liking South Dakota Public Broadcasting on Facebook. You can also follow our Twitter accounts. Our organizational handle is at SODACPB, our news handle is at SDPB News, and our sports handle is at SDPB Sports. Be sure to tune in again next week for another edition of Dakota Digest. I'm Nate Weck for South Dakota Public Broadcasting, and have a great day, everyone.